And that sound means the start of another Missile for the Masses. This is the 53rd Chaplain's Assistance Mortar Pod, where we fix for the fight for freedom wherever there's trouble. I am your host, Gary, and this is the podcast where I talk a little bit about my life in collecting G.I. Joe and other military and adventure toy lines, and where just about every episode I talk about a vehicle, playset, or even a trailer from the G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero toy line from 1982 to the present day. Before we begin, just like to touch base on the 52nd Missile for the Masses. There was a little poll on Spotify that people can reply to, and put out the question, did you know that the Awestriker was based on a real military vehicle, namely the M1040 Emerson Chenauth fast attack vehicle? And three people responded, and two out of three knew it was a real military vehicle. So I thought that was cool, but I didn't discover it till about a year or two ago, and I'm glad that I got some good feedback, and I'm glad if you're listening to this one, it's been a while. Thanks for listening again, and we'll move on. A couple other topical things to talk about. First off is Walmart exclusive figures. I have the latest two. They came in from Walmart, pre-order them God knows when, and they finally came in this week. Big Ben, Night Force Big Ben, and the Range Viper. And all I can say is I'm actually happy to see these later characters from the line showing up. I'm actually kind of surprised that they were Walmart exclusives. I think this is a sign of strength for the G.I. Joe classified line that these lesser characters, these would be, you know, Big Ben, I wouldn't say he's a B-list. He might be a C-list character in most people's eyes. He did come out in 90 or 91 off the top of my head. And, you know, he's not usually a sought-after character, although he does have some cool accessories and he's loaded with gear in his 3 3/4 form. The upscaling to 6-inch is rather faithful. Big ups to the gear he has. He has a modified Ingram, like it has an angled grip instead of a straight grip, like a Mac 10, Mac 11. And then he also has a machine gun that looks like an XM250. And then finally, he has a double-barreled AR-style rifle, or M6 or M4, but it's an AR-15. It's a double-barreled AR-15, which is actually a real gun in real life. It's the Gilboa Snake, and it's not really a practical semi-auto, fully auto rifle. So, I mean, it looks cool from a toy standpoint, but I wouldn't think, you know, it's not like a double-barreled shotgun, so not really something that, to me, adds a lot of value in the realism thing, but as a toy, speaks volumes. And the head sculpt, the gas mask alternate head, neat. I'm not really, like, sold on the gas mask head, but I'm glad it's there. It's kind of retro inspired. I like the patches on his shoulders. He's got his unit patch on his right shoulder and the British flag, the Union Jack on his left. You know, that winter coat, the winter hat. He does look badass. And, you know, just a really good, realistic trooper in the line. A character that we don't see too often. And again, like I said, a surprising addition and a surprising choice for a retailer exclusive, not something that would be mainline. So I'm glad that Walmart and Hasbro see the strength in the brand to do something like this as an exclusive. Now, the only other thing I want to say, the down on that, is the fact that he doesn't have a backpack. So for me, I'm going to add a backpack from probably the Valiverse gear kits that I still have laying around. and it'll add a little bit to him, but it won't be like that oversized olive green backpack he had from 1991. So next up, talking about characters, this one, I'd say, you know, if Big Ben's like a C-list, you know, borderline B-list character, you know, did have a memorable storyline in the late 120s of G.I. Joe, the Barovia storyline where Lady J, Hawk got shot, and Lady J, you know, got him back to Medvac. There's the Range Viper, and the Range Viper didn't really get as many cool comic references. I mean, he was in the Deke cartoon, but, you know, he's like a B-list Viper. He's a cool Viper. He's not always on everybody's, you know, number one with a bullet list for a Viper, but he's always been, for me, an essential Cobra Trooper. I see him as the Cobra Trooper counterpart to Outback. And, you know, some of these newer Joes like Big Ben and Stalker, you know, they fit that vibe, you know, pick a version of Snake Eyes, if you will. But this Range Viper is cool with a lot of nods to the original action figure. You know, you have the cord that goes from the air tank on the backpack to his, you know, helmet that's shaped like a brain. And, you know, the backpack has a walkie-talkie on it. And, you know, he's got a ammo belt that you can drape over. He has the Viper scarf. I mean, it's a good build. The body is a reuse, but I can't place it at the moment. And the blue and black also, to me, looks like it'd be a good fit in case Hasbro wants to put out a paintball Snake Eyes. Just saying. That is a favorite of mine, the version 4 Snake Eyes. But anyway, back to the Range Viper. He's got his grenade launcher. He's got his machine gun belt fed through a drum clipped in below. He's got a pistol with an extended magazine that fits in his holster. He's got his, I like to call it modified Psi. So Psis normally aren't bladed, but this one kind of is, and it fits into his web belt. He's got, you know, grenades over his left shoulder. He's got pockets on his vest. Very tactical. He looks bulky, but tactically bulky. Not like, you know, Bomber, you know, Cobra Island Firefly. You know, this looks appropriately bulky. Looks like an appropriate, you know, soldier. Almost like, you know, maybe even Crossbones from Marvel. The head sculpt is really striking. I love the head sculpt. I love the way they did this helmet that you don't even know. Is it really the helmet? Is it really just, you know, is he another one of Mindbender's, you know, mutated Vipers like the Hydro Viper or the Star Viper? And, you know, you got the red eyes that are just, you know, they just, I don't want to say crimson, but man, it just pops with a little black outline, you know, like eyeshadow. The medium matte blue color of the face. You have, you know, the jaw with the black accents. I mean, it just pops visually with, you know, and then you got the gray matter, you know, the brain, you know, it's just, to me, it's taking that 3 3/4 figure and bringing it up to the next level. This is something that I was not expecting to like it as much as I'm finding it. To me, I'd love to get another one to army build, but it's going to be difficult and or expensive. So, and then the final piece of gear is he comes with an axe. So again, another solid addition to the G.I. Joe line. And I think this guy was a little bit less of a risk. You know, it's a Viper and it's a troop builder. So I think it was a little bit less of a risk for Walmart to say, hey, we want to use this guy. It is Walmart blue. and say what you will, you know, I think it fits. And actually, it's one of the cooler Cobras, I think, so far. You know, just a couple little things in Classified. I'm looking forward to the Crimson set with the Baroness and the Crimson Twins, Tomax and Zaymot. Mostly because I like the Baroness's new head sculpts. I like the fact that they changed the sculpts on her arms. She doesn't have the upper shoulder pads for armor, but it looks like the rest of the sculpt is the same. But basically, the modified head, I think, would look really good on the retro Baroness. I hope they do another Baroness using the Crimson build, but in a more traditional color. I'm also holding out hope against hopes that we can finally get a proper blue uniform Baroness from the early issues of the comic and the first miniseries of the cartoon. There's a lot more Classified stuff I'd love to talk about. The eels, and there's stuff that I've been getting from Gridiron Studios and Mark II Design. I've been really impressed with stuff that the third-party market is bringing to the table. My biggest drawback with all the newer G.I. Joes right now is the gummy guns. If they're not, I guess, cooled just right when they're pulled out of the mold, they always seem to have a permanent warp of some kind in them. I don't mind them having a little bit of give, but it seems like there's too much right now. But you put it on a stand and look at it from, you know, 5 feet away, it looks pretty badass. It looks pretty cool. So I'm getting sucked kind of back into the Classified series because I still have pre-orders that I'm waiting on. And just real quick to touch on something that I find quite ironic. So I posted on Twitter a picture of Big Ben and the Range Viper saying, yeah, these things are cool. Really digging the update. And Walmart responded. And it took every ounce of my being to not be a dick on a public forum. Oh, wait, I'm doing it on a podcast. And to say, hey, I'm still waiting for the $53.11. You guys said you'd refund me because you never actually delivered my two Snake Eyes Retro Series card backs from Walmart. So those never arrived. And it's been, you know, I guess it's time to go back and forth with Walmart yet again to get the money because I'm not getting the product.
G.I. Joe will return after these messages.
So another thing that I said I'd talk about in Missile number 52 was Void Rivals. And as we are gearing up for the Energon universe with G.I. Joe and the Transformers, I figured, hey, I might as well talk a few minutes about what's going on in issues 2 and 3 of Void Rivals. A recap, issue number 1, I thought was a good first issue. It was decent, not something groundbreaking, but something solid enough to, if you have any passing interest, you know, the first issue had just enough to hook you to get to a second one, except if you're a Joe fan, because it had really no G.I. Joe content. That being said, issue number 2 begins with a good flashback story for our two protagonists and fills you in on a little bit of the details and concludes the story set up in the first issue of them being stranded on the asteroid. And it ends with a character from the third season of the Transformers. So Kirkman seems to be leaning a lot into that third season for inspiration. And it is absolutely clear if you get to the third issue of Void Rivals, where you meet another like side character. I believe it is a Quintesson. And oh, sorry, spoiler alert, but it's just, you know, in there. But you see there's things in the background, you know, the art. You know, Lorenzo De Felici does good art. And, you know, Kirkman is a talented writer. And I think he's enjoying his new take on the storyline. And unfortunately, in the letters column of issue number 3, they did spoil this, and I am a fan. So it looks like ROM, the Space Knight, is not going to be part of the Energon universe. And I am actually kind of heartbroken at that. But with the picking up the two reprints of issue number one, one of them being a blank cover, at Boom Tube Comics, and also having the omnibus for ROM, all published by Marvel, leads one to think that maybe Marvel has reacquired the license to ROM, and they might be doing something with it. So, fingers crossed, ROM was awesome. I've read about a third of it, and yeah, I'm a big fan of ROM. And that's really it. You know, the comics are solid. If you want to see what's going on with the Energon universe, if you're curious, like me, on how G.I. Joe is going to fit in to a universe with big mechanized robots, this is something that should appeal to you. So pick up the floppies. They're in reprints, you know, second printing, third printings. So they're available to get and to read. And or if you want, just wait for the eventual trade paperback on issue number 6.
Now back to G.I. Joe.
That's about it for the opening of the Chaplain's Motorpod. So now let's take a quick break and we'll get ready for the main topic. This missile, we're going to be talking about an epic vehicle for the G.I. Joe toy line. Something that has spawned many revisions and many reissues. We are going to be talking about the epic Cobra tank, the 1983 Cobra Hiss. And to start off with talking about this thing, I dug into the Dan Klingensmith Creating G.I. Joe collection. And in volume 2, I really urge, if you're listening along or if you're more curious after listening, to check out his website, creatinggijoe.com, where you can get all the volumes there. And also, you can also get them through his current ongoing Kickstarter for volume 13 of already a 14-volume series of just pre-production and behind-the-scenes books. It's Kickstartering now for volume 13. I've already backed it. It's an awesome, awesome resource. If you're curious, too, you could also listen to The Order of Battle, where Jason and Joel, they talk to Dan and just goes on a little bit about what's going on. Truly epic resource. And in volume 2 is the 1983 Hiss. So Dan did all of this research. I'm just going to touch on the highlights. Designed by Wayne Luther, and you have the only presentation artwork for it, which shows an earlier iteration of the Hiss that would come back in toy form, just not in 1983. You can see one of the color studies for the Hiss tank driver. We'll talk about him too. That's not the red and blue. It's one of the earlier, darker, I want to say purple versions of the driver. And then also a little bit about how it ended up with the plastic tracks with the dumbbell wheels, and some other ideas and concepts for the Hiss, because it was originally designed to be like the Mobat with working treads, but then that got nixed, and it kind of explains how they went around to figuring out what they were going to do. It's a really good two-page spread of just a little bit of the history of the Hiss, and, you know, as it went to concept, and then because we know how it ended up and how epic it would become, basically being used in all the G.I. Joe media, and just a signature silhouette that added to the imagination and play of the Hiss tank. And then also because it is such an iconic early Cobra vehicle, it is the first HasLab for the G.I. Joe Classified series, a wildly successful one at that. So before I can talk about any of these other hisses, heck, we just talked about the Energon universe, and there's a Megatron hiss, and I don't remember talking about it, but maybe I'm overdue for that. But still, how can I talk about all these other hiss tanks if I don't talk about the original first? So that's why I am today, because eventually the HasLab is going to be here before you know it, and I'm going to want to talk about it because, you know, somebody said, you know, they want me to talk more about Classified. And okay, I guess I will. But anyway, 1983 hiss, epic. The cornerstone for Cobra tanks from 1983 to the present day. According to Yojo.com, $6.39 was the MSRP in 1983 for the Cobra hiss. And for that $6.39, you got a vehicle and a driver. So for approximately the price of three action figures, you got a tank and a figure. So I'm thinking that's a win because, heck, this is a pretty sturdy toy for the money spent. Is it as heavy and motorized as the Mobat? Of course not. That's why they made the decisions that they made. For $6.39, we'll take a look at the box. First, you have the Cobra Hiss, HISS High Speed Sentry with double Diablo cannons. You can elevate and swivel. Does not shoot. It's not the 90s yet. And the box shows the Hiss tank with the red outline 788 numbers. The Hiss tank driver is piloting it, with a Cobra officer in the gunner seat and Cobra commander riding on the bumper. We go to the back and we see, based on Cobra Command's top secret designs, Hiss is their newest advanced weapon system and main battle vehicle. Use it to help the evil enemy army of Cobra Command battle G.I. Joe. And it says, guns swivel and elevate. Does not shoot. Gun turret holds one Cobra figure because, you know, the Joe team is just going to blow this up. They're not going to hop in and steal it for their own heroic purposes. And interesting, on the back of the box, actual size when assembled, snap together assembly, no tools, no glue, sturdy construction for rugged play. Platform has room to transport other Cobra figures. Super realistic detail. Simulated treads with free rolling wheels underneath, three flag points, unique Cobra design, opening canopy, and contains Hiss body, chassis, tank tread assembly, guns canopy, turret, gun mount, Hiss driver, label sheet, instructions, and blueprints. The detailed blueprints inside these exciting blueprints explain fully how a real Hiss would operate. Add them to your Cobra Command file. What's more to say? I mean, it's a pretty good description. I want to open up a box right now. Looking at the prototype they photographed, I see the Hiss tank treads way out back. So we're used to the canopy overhangs the front, but the treads are underneath the main body of the vehicle. On this one, the rear bogey wheel is very far behind the body of the Hiss. So to me, that suggests that maybe the platform was meant to be longer. Now, where you might think that this applies is in issue 16 of G.I. Joe Real American Hero, penciled by Mike Vosburgh. You know, there's that long battle between Destro, Hawk, where Cobra Commander shoots Hawk in the back. And, you know, if you have a Hiss and you're playing with the Hiss, you're like, there's not that much room. But I'm looking at these blueprints and it's like, yeah, I can see how there's that much room. The other thing shows on this is even the front bogies are a little further behind the canopy. So there's like this break in between the front canopy and the gun section of the Hiss, and all the treads are completely behind that. So in the toy form, it got shortened up, and I think wisely so. Another thing about the Hiss on the back of the box that I don't have on my Hisses is the two airplanes, the emblems for being shot down by the twin Diablo cannons. And then finally, of course, got to talk about the Hiss tank driver, also pictured on the back of the box. Thanks to 3D Joe's for the image, because I don't own a box. The logo on the figure prototype seems to be larger than what actually came on the figure. With that, let's talk about the Hiss tank driver. Cobra Hiss driver, codename The Enemy, file name unknown, primary military specialty, Hiss driver, secondary military specialty, mechanical and electrical systems, birthplace, various countries, grade 05. So this is kind of like a pilot in the Air Force or in the Navy. He's an officer. Cobra Hiss drivers are selected from the best and most evil of Cobra Command's thousands of yearly recruits. Each is chosen for his physical strength and total dedication to evil. Hiss drivers are graduates of Cobra Battle School, Advanced Weapons System Training, Qualified Experts, Hiss Vehicle, Fang Copter, Knowledge of All NATO and G.I. Joe Weapons. Cobra Hiss drivers are committed to the destruction of G.I. Joe. This newly developed battle vehicle is a real match for the G.I. Joe team. Beware. So, it's a little bit generic. It doesn't have a lot of characterization into it. But it's enough to give you the flavor of the Hiss tank driver. He's evil. He hates G.I. Joe. And he's a proficient, you know, soldier. And to talk about the figure, you know, this is a 1983 swivel arm, swivel neck figure, molded in red with black long boots going up to his red thigh, sharing the waist with the Cobra Troopers. The chest is molded in red with a blue tampo for like the chest plate, and then a silver tampo with the Cobra logo. Arms are molded in red. He's got some black, you know, wristbands with some detail, nothing really too specific. Early figures are kind of smaller and there are details there, but it's kind of harder to make out or my eyesight's going. You know, he's got some nice, you know, chest details on the top of his torso, which leads you up to his helmet, again, molded in red, black face mask, silver painted goggles, and almost has like a little mohawk on the top of the helmet. Looks almost medieval. Now, the one thing about the Hiss driver is the silver paint is prone to easily scratching and being worn off. Very common to have the Cobra logo completely missing from the chest plate. So that makes him, you know, when he's in decent condition, he's a good buy. If you got most of the Cobra logo, you know, it drives the price up. And one with the mint logo commands a premium, because having one with the original logo is kind of like a premium item these days. He's solid. You know, he fits. It is definitely a sign of things to come. The color red, you know, would be returned in driver form in the next year with Wild Weasel. It does pop against the black tank. He's a good addition. Before we get to the blueprints, we'll talk a little bit about the construction of the Hiss tank and its parts. The tank treads portion, as stated on the box, came assembled. It's been a long time since I assembled a Hiss tank type vehicle. I think the last time was a 1991 septic tank. So I can't remember really if the treads were snapped together or not, but I'm going to assume, based on the description, that they were and the dumbbell wheels were in. You have the body. So the treads are molded in a gloss black. The body is in a slightly satin black, a little bit of texture on it, adding in. Moving up, you get the turret, Twin Diablo cannons, molded in that same gloss black. Some light assembly there with the cannons having to go in, and then the cap snapping down over that and sliding into the body of the Hiss with two keyways. Finally, you have the clear canopy, which snaps securely in the back and clips down in the front. A simple vehicle overall, pretty much all in black. Things to watch out for on the toy, if you're looking for one of these, is the two pins that ratchet in three positions for the Twin Diablo cannons. Those are commonly broken or bent, at the very least. It's very common to find a Hiss tank with essentially droopy cannons. There are fixes available on YouTube and, you know, using your imagination, but basically it involves taking what's left of the broken pin that's inside the cannon and putting in like a paperclip or pin so it allows it to ratchet again, but having some springiness so it doesn't break anything more. The other thing that you can do is, if you don't want to fix it and you're lazy, later G.I. Joe Hiss tanks have three keyways, and if you cut off one of the keyways, it should drop in. I have a Parts Hiss 3 somewhere in my basement that I literally have only because of that. The Hiss canopies are commonly discolored and warped. So again, finding a clean one that's clear and not excessively warped from heat or sunlight, those are premium pieces as well. So with that, let's move on to the blueprint. And going around, you know, 1 through 16, you get, number one, the cannon motor drive access hatch. What that's pointing to is the front or the cover of the Twin Diablo cannon, the piece that you snap down to make sure that the cannons can move up and down and it doesn't just come right out. It's covered by a Cobra sticker, usually. It doesn't open. It's just a cover. And there's no real detail on it that I see that's worth noting. It's really simple. On top, you have the turret cockpit two-way communicator, which is some lightly detailed molding on top of that motor drive access hatch piece. You go to number three, the tungsten spotlights, DeLorean-inspired, in some people's eyes, essentially a white decal, you know, with stripes that's placed on the front of the Hiss tank, gives it that look of something that can light up the night as it encroaches on its target. Again, another signature look for the Hiss tank that would serve it well, especially as it gets mimicked, copied, and upscaled in the 21st century. Number four is the idler bogies. That is the upper front bogey at the top of the treads. And then you go to number five, the shell-proof tinted canopy. Again, that's the clear canopy that the driver sits underneath, opening up. You get to number six, the command cockpit with drive controls. Now, like most G.I. Joe vehicles of this vintage, you don't have like a joystick sticking out in between the driver's legs. And also, you don't really have like a dashboard and you don't have levers molded in. So it is rather simple. Essentially, your driver just sits down and lays down. But like on some G.I. Joe vehicles, even value vehicles, you can spread the guy's shoulders out and he has like levers or something on each side to grab and drive. This doesn't have that. You have some hydraulic details to the driver's right and some other little like mechanical details to the driver's left. The seat is textured lightly, almost like a vinyl seat, and it does have some grating pattern for where his footwells would be. In the center, there's a couple little circular details that could be gauges or a compass. There's enough there, but not a lot. Number 7 is the fleet identification number, 788. In subsequent hisses, they changed the number as well. It is pretty cool, though, when you have a column of hiss tanks that they all share the same 788 number. Interesting thing about the 788 number is there are 3 versions of that. The earliest version is the 788 in just red outline. That was the original release. Later on, it would get all red to show up because sometimes the red lines would wash out. It is common on older G.I. Joe toys to see it like kind of washed out and hard to read. Then finally, the hiss tank would be re-released as a mail-away, and it would be white letters with the red outline. Also of note, the mail-away hiss tank did not include the hiss driver, who was also a mail-away separately in and of himself. Number 8 are the 90mm twin cannons. I wish they used Diablo cannons on the blueprints. That's what they are. They look pretty cool. I think one of the great details of these cannons is the fact that they sit on top of a large body. We'll get more into it, but with the hiss tank's height, you believe that, hey, these cannons, you can store all the ammo. So, I mean, unlimited ammo, and who cares about reloading? So these are better than 50 cal machine guns. No, from a tank perspective, not to spoil anything, barrels are kind of short. But I also like the fact that the blueprint doesn't call out that they're anti-aircraft or anything. They're actually just cannons. So you want to shoot down an airplane? Go for it. You want to shoot another tank? Go for it. So these cannons are just cool. You know, no, we'll just blow stuff up. Number 9 is the engine radiator, which is in front of the cannons and behind the cockpit. So what that leads me to believe is that the engine for the hiss tank is central inside the hiss. That is a neat little thing to consider when playing with the hiss. So you hit the radiator, the engine's going to overheat. Then the Cobra retreats. The other thing, too, is from a targeting perspective, if you're playing on the Joe side that day, is you know where to shoot at the hiss, which is the center, which can also kind of be the hardest part to hit sometimes because it is usually one of the more well-armored areas of the tank. Number 10 is the main battle turret, where you plop in your figure to fire the twin cannons. Another thing, like the Mobat, there's no foot pegs. It's just a little plastic divider for the feet. So this way, when you turn them, the figure turns with it. Very convenient, very easy, simple to play with. You get number 11, the rear personnel platform. It's another graded area on the back of the hiss, has 2 foot pegs. Depending on the release of the hiss, the foot pegs would get changed for modern feet, so they're smaller. Just a thing to look out for. And also an easy way to determine if the hiss you have, you're holding, is vintage or not. The other way to tell if it's vintage or not is underneath the driver's seat. If you look on the bottom of the hiss tank, you'll see either copyright 1983 or copyright 2002 when they reuse the mold and stuff like that. So that's another easy way to identify if your hiss is original or not. Number 12 are the self-sealing fuel canisters. On the blueprint, it's showing these canisters that are to the rear of the body of the hiss, just above the treads. You can see them in the little cavity. There are 2 on the left side and 1 on the right. Again, neat little detail. And then you have 13, the tow hook, which comes in handy if you have, let's say, an asp or any other trailer toy. It's very versatile. You know, the Sears SMS, the Cobra version of the G.I. Joe MMS from 1982 and 93 that came with Hawk. Number 14 are the ground equipment lockers. So these are details that are inside the treads. Some people might think they look like armor, but in actuality, they're essentially like an armored toolbox. So you open these up, and for the price of the toy, I know why, but this is something that, now that I'm thinking about the HasLab Hiss Tank, this would be a cool area where you actually had pull-out storage drawers to put weapons, tools, you name it, you know, a nice, convenient hidey hole for the toy and just another hidden play feature that doesn't exist except on these blueprints. It's a great way to make use of all the vertical space that the Hiss Tank offers. 15 is the armor plating skirts, which is essentially more detail below the lockers. At the very bottom of the treads are the skirts, and then right above them are the lockers. And then number 16, the very rear bogey, is the drive bogey. So all in all, it's a good set of blueprints. Not too much detail trying to sell me the Hiss. But the Hiss is a very attractive looking toy, which kind of sells itself. A couple things about the design of the Hiss Tank. It has been said and criticized by other people other than me that the riveted panels look along the side of the Hiss and on the treads is very World War II, very dated. The other thing is the shape of the Hiss treads is reminiscent, again, of World War II tanks. In that way, it is looking backwards. Looking towards the future with the high-speed theme is the fact that the nose of the Hiss, the driver's cockpit of the Hiss, juts forward, which gives it that image of movement, which gives it that image of slenderness and speed, and also, you know, like the tip of an arrow. But that comes at the cost of the height of the Hiss. Now, when I'm talking about the height of the Hiss, we're going to start talking about the practicality of the Hiss in real world. And I'm going to echo some things that I've read online, which, you know, informed, and I wish I could, you know, go and find the Facebook post I'm sure that I read it on. But essentially, the height of the Hiss makes it an easy target for G.I. Joe. That's not exactly, you know, what you kind of want. You don't want to have easy targets. You want to be able to win battles, not, you know, send out sacrificial pawns everywhere. Because the Hiss Tank, I would think, would be an expensive pawn. The other thing that is a huge detriment to the Hiss is the overhanging cockpit for the driver. That is an easy target for a commando, Snake Eyes, to strap a claymore or mine or grenade or whatever, an area where it's a blind spot. It offers severe tactical disadvantages. The other part of that also is the fact that high lift also makes it subject to tank traps. So the Dragon's Teeth obstacle that would be featured in the Battle for Benzene in the early teens of the comic, you know, they talk about how that stopped, you know, the G.I. Joe tanks, and then the G.I. Joe Raider, an awesome tank that I covered earlier, was able to traverse over it because of the articulated treads. The Hiss would be trapped by that same trap. So that is another disadvantage of the Hiss. What the Hiss makes up for those real-world disadvantages and why this design wouldn't work as a tank, you know, even in the 80s, the era of, you know, Mobat, which, you know, the Mauler, and, you know, just all the other tanks going on, the M1 Abrams and stuff. that doesn't take away from the fact that this thing is an awesome toy, and it doesn't take away from the fact that, you know, it just looks so damn sexy. The cannons, like I said earlier, they're short, so you don't have the accuracy at range that you would in another tank, Mauler, Mobat. But what it does is, you know, like a lot of the helicopter toys, where the blades aren't accurately long, your child's mind, your suspension of disbelief, your eagerness to get into battle, you know, they overlook details like that. These 90 millimeter cannons are going to put a hurt on G.I. Joe. The only thing it really doesn't talk about is, like in a modern tank, you know, you have your heat rounds, your sabot rounds, and other types. You know, you're just saying 90 millimeters. So is this essentially just 90 millimeter shells? Maybe. And you know what? Those are going to do plenty of damage on their own. The Hiss tank, again, is an epic vehicle. It is something that I, at one point, had 11 of the 1983s. That was too much. I downsized quite a bit to actually just having three. I have one mail away and one each of the original release with the red sticker and the red outline sticker. It is a great toy. It looks great in a display. And I guess it's time to rate it on a scale of 1 to 5 cannons. Good toy, great value. The price on the secondary market is still reasonable for a good one. And if you don't need to have, if droopy cannons aren't a deal killer and you're going to find a way to fix them, you know, they can be had really cheap, because the cannons is the number one problem with these, with the canopy being an often overlooked number two detractor. So the use in G.I. Joe media and G.I. Joe stories, you know, cements this as an epic Cobra vehicle. And with that, you know, this is a full 5 Diablo cannon rating. I can't imagine a G.I. Joe collection without a Hiss. And again, this tank set the stage for G.I. Joe for 40 plus years. Well, I have been your host, Gary, and I thank you for listening to this, the 53rd Missile for the Masses. If you've enjoyed this, feel free to rate and review wherever you listened, as it only helps to grow and improve this podcast. The Chaplain's Assistant Motorpod is hosted by Spotify for Podcasters. And if you're listening on Spotify, you also have the ability to answer the question and poll that accompanies this. For more Motopod, you can follow me on social media at Chaplain Joe Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and even YouTube. I just hit 100 followers on YouTube. The Chaplain's Assistant Motorpod is a strange, but not as strange, nerdy little brother of The Pint, a pop culture podcast. And if you made it this far, I still have more t-shirts, and I'm getting ready to do another run of extra large shirts. They're $12, and all you have to do is send me an email to chaplainjoepod@gmail.com, and we'll work out the details and get one out to you. Now that is all out of the way, one final missile for the masses. Be decent to each other. See ya.